All businesses, all organizations, from the smallest to the very largest, need a leader. They have their committees, their echelons of command, and perhaps a widely dispersed group of semi-autonomous divisions. But the overall company and each of its divisions must have strong and able leadership. Contrary to popular belief, you do not raise morale in an organization. It filters down from the top. The attitudes of the people working in any organization will always reflect the attitude of the leader. And finally, this leader will always be found to be just one person, the man or woman on the white horse. I'm sure you're aware that even the largest and oldest companies with many thousands of employees and hundreds of management people will, when they find themselves in trouble or not doing as well as they should, seek out one person and place him or her in the position of final authority. The whole company, the board of directors, and perhaps thousands of stockholders all look to this one person for leadership and success. The case of Chrysler and Lee Iacocca is an excellent example. Incidentally, we have Mr. Iacocca on a tape cassette program, and it's excellent. Wherever you find a successful going concern, whether it's a gas station, a supermarket, a school, club, PTA, or a well-organized home, you'll find behind its success an outstanding leader. This is the most valuable person in society. In industry, he or she makes the wheels turn, the entire economy work. This is the person who's been responsible for the growth of nations and their position in the world. The employer of millions, the dreamer, the planner, and a clock to him or her is something that other people watch. You'll find this person working early and late, and when not working, he or she is usually thinking and planning. Way back during the Depression of the 1930s, the phrase most often heard by employers was, "I'll do anything, just give me a job." Millions were unemployed. Thousands of business firms had closed their doors, and outside employment offices, long lines of people stood waiting for any kind of work. It was during this time in Long Beach, California, crowded to overflowing with thousands who had migrated there looking for work when there wasn't enough work to go around for the permanent residents, it seemed, that a friend of mine made an interesting discovery. He found that he could go to work almost anywhere he chose. Now, amazing as this may sound, it was absolutely true. It dawned upon him one day that the business establishments of various kinds were just as anxious to succeed as were the people looking for work. The owners and managers of these businesses were worried and concerned over the hard times which had descended upon the country. And a great many of them were looking for someone to come to their aid, the person who would somehow show up and solve their business problems. But all they heard was people asking for work and saying, "I'll do anything." These people were asking for a paycheck from a company which was very likely teetering on the brink of financial ruin itself. And so signs appeared in windows all over the land reading, "No help wanted." This was a negative form of advertising, and while it kept the plaintive hordes away from the door, it also hurt business. Well, this friend of mine decided to become a part of the solution instead of a part of the problem. And his method was simple, and it worked like a charm. He selected the kind of business he felt he would like to work in, and in which he could build a career. He then devoted a month to finding out all he could about that particular business. He talked to other people in the same line. He heard their problems and what they felt was wrong. He talked for hours, asking questions, probing about what they felt was needed, and so on. He went to the public library and read everything he could find on that industry. And then he began to think of ways and means by which this business might be improved. When he was ready and finally made his call on the company for which he had decided to work, instead of asking for a job, he said to the boss something like this, "I believe I know of several ways in which your business can be greatly increased, and I'd like to talk to you about them." Well, here he was, selling the one thing on earth in which his prospect was most interested. The fact that he knew a good deal about the business now permitted him to talk intelligently. He took a positive attitude, expressed a willingness to pitch in and help put the business on a sound and profitable footing. And, of course, that's right, he got the job. Millions out of work and asking for jobs. But one man who found a way to be of help. What had he done? Well, first he had specialized. He had selected one line of work and decided that that was where his future would be. Now he had to prove himself, and he did. The jack of all trades and master of none was the man who suffered during the Depression. People who knew what they were doing and where they were going sailed through those Depression years just like a large ship sails through a storm. It wasn't as comfortable as it could have been, but at least the crossing was a success. At least they didn't founder. And thousands of businesses actually grew larger and prospered during the Depression. The best way for you to develop a security that lasts a lifetime is to become outstanding at one particular line of work. Look at it this way. Regardless of economic ups and downs, the industry of which that line of work is a part will continue to operate. It won't shut down completely. As long as you're in the top 5% of the people in that industry, you know you'll always be in demand. You'll be wanted and needed, not just where that industry is concerned, but where you and your family are concerned also. The man or woman who becomes truly outstanding at what he or she does has the world on a string. Here's the person of confidence and peace of mind. Here's the person who's quietly aware of his or her ability and intimate knowledge of his or her job in particular industry. Here's the homemaker or student who's at the top of the group. They've got it made, and they and everybody else know it. Ask yourself this question. Am I now such a person? Down deep inside, you know the answer. If you answered yes, you're among the most fortunate people and in one of the smallest and most elite groups on Earth. If your answer was no, it can be turned into a yes in a surprisingly short time. The first step is to make one really big and important decision. It's a decision the great majority of people never make and suffer as a result. Failing to make this decision keeps a person from ever really getting on course or clarifying his or her goals. If you make the decision I'm now going to recommend, you can take a deep breath, give a comfortable sigh of relief, fix your eyes firmly upon your target, and go to work relaxed, comfortable, and sure in the knowledge that the success you seek will be yours. The great steel magnate Andrew Carnegie, when asked the formula for success, answered, "Put all your eggs in one basket, and then watch that basket." Let's be frankly realistic. Who gets laid off work during an economic slump? Well, what gets thrown over the side when a ship is in danger of going down? Everything not absolutely essential to the operation of the vessel and the safety of its passengers. And it's the same with a business or any other organization. It has to be that way. With a corporation, its main purpose is to remain in business forever. As long as it remains in business, it can provide a needed product or service, protect the investment of those who have faith in it, and provide jobs for those who are essential to its continuity of operation. It's the duty of management to protect the firm and the people who depend upon it, just as it's the captain's duty to do everything in his power to keep his ship sailing. All a person needs to do is make certain that he or she is a vital part of the business or organization. Those who insist on remaining spare gear, those who do no more than they must in order to squeak by, those who say, "I'm not going to do any more than I'm paid to do," must expect to be jettisoned when things get too rough for safety. Nobody, particularly the captain, likes to see cargo thrown over the side, but if it'll help save the ship, there's nothing else to do. That's why people are laid off. It has nothing to do with management and labor relations or personalities, and in the long run, it's best for everyone, since once smooth sailing has again been reached, additional employment can again be made available. So each of us must decide whether we want to be part of the cargo or a member of the crew. It's said that millions suffer today from a malady called panophobia. Panophobia means literally fear of everything. It's an uneasy feeling, a feeling of insecurity that generally manifests itself as a sort of lump of fear that settles right behind the belt buckle, especially on Sunday evenings and on Monday mornings. There's nothing you can put your finger on. It's just an apprehension, a feeling of foreboding. And this extremely unpleasant condition is said to result from the unspoken but realized fact that we're getting credit for more than we're actually doing, or that we're doing less than we could be doing. It's the perfectly natural and normal understanding deep within each of us that there's something basically wrong about getting praise that's not earned, or if you're an employee, being paid for something you're not doing as well as you possibly can. If we have panophobia, running doesn't do any good. We find it follows us on vacation and around the house and yard on weekends. It's inside us, and no matter how fast the jet we board or how exciting the television program we're watching, soon we're aware of it again. Now, there's a simple cure for this malady. It's to throw ourselves not out of a window, but into activity, into our work. It's the decision to be worth more than we're being paid. Only in this way can we grow. It's overbalancing the scales in the service we give, knowing that our rewards must follow as a natural result. Anyone who will be honest with himself or herself realizes that he or she has been happiest and most satisfied after having successfully completed a difficult job. A leader is a person who can help and lead others. It's the conscientious mother who wants her children to grow up knowing the rules for success and happiness. It's the father who shows by example that any job worth doing is worth doing well. It's the student who studies to learn, not just to get a grade, who has a mind of his or her own and sets the pace for his or her fellow students. It's the farmer whose farm sets an example in his area, and the small businessman or woman whose business continues to grow and prosper with the passing years. It's the employee who has the good sense to realize that one gets most out of any job by giving loyalty and dedication to the firm that pays his or her wages. A leader is any person who realizes the importance of becoming a bigger and better person with the passing of every day, week, and month. A leader takes the responsibility of his or her own growth, a planner, a thinker, a doer. Each of us can become such a leader in our own area of activity. It's not difficult, and in the long run, it's easier for us and on us than what at first may appear to be the easier of two courses. Simply fix your eye upon your goal. Visualize it with every ounce of your being, enjoy the prospect of it, and courageously set out toward it. Maintain a cheerful, helpful attitude toward everyone. Why shouldn't you be cheerful since you know you'll achieve everything you've set your heart upon? Become a kind of sponge for information which will help you on your way. You don't have to waste years making the mistakes others have made before. You'll be surprised at how quickly you'll reach your goal, but don't be impatient. Know and have faith that what should come to you will come to you in the right time. Everything in the world works on the side of the person who works with nature's laws. And above all, if you should forget everything else, remember that everything about you, everything you will ever have, know, experience in any way, operates as a result of law, law that is true and unchanging, the law of the stars and of the balance of the world. As Emerson wrote, let him learn a prudence of a higher strain. Let him learn that everything in nature, even dust and feathers, go by law and not by luck, and that what he sows, he reaps. Look about you. Take stock of your present situation, because it's nothing more nor less than the result of your past sowing. Are you happy with it? Is it what you want? Then you know what you must sow today and tomorrow and the next day. And in the sowing, rest in the calm, serene, and cheerful certainty that having sown, you will then reap the rich results that come automatically all the years of your life, the abundant harvest. Now, this is Earl Nightingale reminding you that success as a human being in modern society does not come naturally. It requires the conscious utilization of ourselves in the service of others. We have our minds, our genetic possibilities, a certain amount of time, and our free will. We belong to the world minority that lives in a free society. We can become whatever we seriously make up our minds to become. That's possible because whatever we seriously decide to do is naturally linked to our genetic possibilities. A person with little or no aptitude for science will never decide to become a scientist. A naturally shy and retiring person will never apply for a job in sales, or if he does, he'll soon get out of it. Each of us has his or her own inner voice. Emerson referred to it as that iron string that vibrates within us. Each of us wants to succeed during our holiday on Earth, and each of us should. But we don't succeed in groups. We succeed or fail as individuals. The Lead the Field program you've heard on these tape cassettes contains the best basic information and the great ideas we need to reach whatever goal we seriously choose. Listen to these tapes often. You'll be astonished to discover how much you missed with your first and second listening. And there's a very good reason why this happens. As we listen to a message, an idea will catch our interest, and we concentrate on it for a few seconds or longer. Now, while we are thus engaged, we miss what's being said during the time we're concentrating on that idea. It's like lifting the tone arm on a record. Now, the next time, we won't stop listening when that idea appears, and we will really hear, consciously for the first time, what immediately follows. Think of this program, and the other Nightingale Conant programs you order in the future, as your partners in success. You can always refer back to them. You'll find yourself delighted by the new enthusiasm and excitement you'll experience as you bring new meaning, new words into your life. Thank you.